Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
We are brought to you tonight by Lavazzi International, the exclusive retailer of handcrafted ceramic sinks, combining a handmade manufacturing process with an industrial finish. If you're looking for something different, check out their tribal design, bike design, or maybe their puzzle design. Check them out, lavazzi.co.uk. That's lavasi.co.uk. Now shipping to the United States of America and Canada. The promo code is FANGO, and you will go ahead and save yourself 25% off of any purchase. Now back to the show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Amp Radio, presented by the Amp Radio Network and Lavazzi International. This particular show we like to call Proteus's Prime Time, and welcome to it. I am your host, Proteus, and of course, once again, I am lucky enough to be joined by Post Media's own Danny Austin. We can follow Danny at DannyAustin_9. Danny, how are you tonight?
I'm good, man. As I told you before the show, I'm folding some laundry, and I just, after months, one of my favorite pairs of socks, I just managed to match up. So excited about that. Excited to be talking to you. I got a big wedding this weekend, so having this pair of socks is gonna, yeah, it's gonna make my weekend that much better. It's a good time to be alive, I guess.
It is a good time to be alive, and at least the dryer has not eaten your special socks. I appreciate that, because you know what, man, one always goes missing, right? I mean, nothing you can do about it. One always goes missing, and we think the dryer eats them. So I'm glad you found your lucky socks.
Yeah, I mean, I literally have 11 unmatched socks sitting on my bed right now. I do have another load in the washer, and I'm just glad we're giving the people the riveting podcast content they wanted today. Yeah.
Absolutely, this is podcast gold. But Danny, if for longtime listeners of Proteus's Primetime show, let's just bring everybody up to speed. You know, I haven't done one of these shows in a little while, and I haven't done one with you for a little while. So let's catch up with you. Let's. What's making Danny Austin tick? If nobody's following you on Twitter and they don't know what you do, what are you doing right now for Post Media?
Yeah, so I'm based out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and you know, been here for a little while now. But my general title is just kind of sports reporter, and always has been. But I've covered the MMA beat nationally, and sort of our Calgary St. Peter, so CFL beat reporter, left last year for another opportunity, and I'm kind of doing it on my own this year, and it's traditionally been a beat that's done by two people. So it's, to be honest, it's been a big adjustment. It's been a lot of work. I'm still trying as best I can to keep up with the MMA stuff. I shouldn't say that. I don't have any trouble keeping up with it. It's just, you don't always have the time to, you know, track down fighters and do the original content as much as you'd like, but that doesn't mean I'm not following along, because, you know, I'm at Junkie and fighting pretty much every day as it is. So, so I don't know. It's, crazy way to make a living, but a whole lot of football this summer. That'll wrap up at the end of November, but that's kind of what's up.
And for anybody who's a new listener, I know we have had a new influx of listeners recently. If you're unfamiliar with Danny, please go back into the archives. Danny and I have done a lot of shows together. Basically, we like to dive into things, to get a little bit deeper into MMA, and that's what we're going to do tonight, Danny. But first, I just wanted to make mention, we have not made any, the last show we did was on Sunday before the Las Vegas tragedy, and of course, the unfortunate events that happened in Edmonton as well. But the main news has been the events that happened in Las Vegas, and of course, this weekend's show is there, UFC 216 is going to be at the T-Mobile Center in Las Vegas. And of course, we're hearing a lot of the fighters, say that there are more things, more important things on their mind, or other things on their mind than fighting this particular week as we run into media week. And I just wanted to go ahead and give you an opportunity, and I just wanted to say it myself, just acknowledge the fact that, you know, these kind of tragedies need to stop happening, and we feel very bad for anybody that was affected by that. I know Dan Hardy's wife had a friend whose son was at the concert. I'm not sure how the update on that particular person, but you know, somebody 6 degrees of separation may have been affected. So Danny, if you want to say something, anything at all on this, and then we'll move into some MMA news.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's important that we address it. And, you know, I think I largely echo your thoughts. I spent a lot of time in Vegas because of work, and yeah, because that's where so many fights happen. So, you know, these things always hit close to home. I mean, gun violence is just such a plague that affects the United States of America quite specifically. So, you know, it's just sort of so unfathomable that these sorts of tragedies happen. But then you add into the fact that, you know, that parking lot basically where that concert was taking place. I mean, I stay at the Hooters, which can't be more than, you know, 300 yards away from where that happened. I know that area very well. So, you know, it's scary and, it's awful. And, I don't think it's inappropriate to say that. I really hope that, you know, at some point we can count on American representatives in both Congress and Senate, you know, taking action to prevent these tragedies. Doesn't feel like it's happening right now, but I will say, I mean, I've checked in, you know, I'm not going to name names because these are private conversations with, you know, people in Vegas who are obviously, you know, quite emotionally scarred by this, even if they're not physically. And I have checked in with all the MMA reporters, and it does seem like, fortunately, you know, people, you know, the people that we rely on for MMA journalism, MMA content, mostly seem to be okay. And with that being said, I mean, obviously thoughts, prayers go out to all the victims and all their friends and family. And I just, you know, I hate guns. That's all. That's my last statement on it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I was thinking about how to say this, you know, softly to everybody. We are, let's keep in mind, we're two Canadian gentlemen, and we're from Ontario. So like, guns aren't really a major part of our lives. So I have a really hard time understanding gun violence, especially, you know, anyways, I don't want to get into it, but I agree with you. I'm not a big fan of guns, and let's get into the MMA stuff. What do you think about that?
I think that's, yeah, I think, I hope we dealt with that in a way that
yeah,
is appropriate.
I think we did.
But, perfect. Yeah, let's talk fights.
Okay, so basically what I wanted to do tonight on tonight's show is do a State of the Union address on the UFC. We are over a year of the new ownership coming in, and we on this show, of course, we like to refer to the new ownership as the Empire, but of course, that's just in jest. So, Danny, I'm going to open the floor to you to just give you some, you know, opening statements about what you think and your feelings on, you know, what we've seen over the past year and where you think we are. And then I'm going to get you into some more, you know, specific questions. But I'll open the floor to you now for any comment that you would like to have on where you think the UFC is now and what's happening as we see this unfold in front of our faces in 2017.
I mean, I think a little bit, and, you know, I am going to qualify this, so this sort of comes across as me having a hot take, but that's not what I mean to do here. I mean, I do think that we've seen, ultimately, MMA fade in terms of cultural relevance a little bit compared to where it was last year. That's partially, you know, 2016 was a pretty amazing year, largely, you know, thanks to Conor, thanks to sort of the, you know, the lingering goodwill that was built up through Ronda Rousey's run, and, you know, right now, you and I sort of talked about this probably about a month ago, but, you know, I'm not down to 216 right now. In part, I mean, I need to take time off because I've been working a lot. But when I kind of did the calculation, I thought, you know, is this card really worth me going down to? And it's just, I don't know anyone who's asking me about it. I haven't felt sort of outside of the hardcore fight community. I mean, I love Tony Ferguson versus Kevin Lee as a headliner. I think it's a great fight. I wish it wasn't for an interim title. I'm pretty sick of that. But it's weird. I mean, I think the UFC has done a perfectly fine job of putting good fights together. But all the hard work that they put into building stars just doesn't really feel like it's happening right now. The promotion's just sort of feeling a little bit lazy right now, and I think that's really a shame. And you know, you need to invest in your talent, and I'm not seeing that happen right now. And it's, you know, I think we can talk about Conor McGregor as a separate thing potentially, but you know, all this work was done, all this promotion. I mean, it feels like they kind of have the blueprint for how to build a star, and they haven't been even trying to do it, is my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And one thing, we have a caller on the line. And caller, I'm not going to get to you. This is a closed conversation. So if you want to be on the show later, that's fine. But we're going to have a closed conversation right now. So thank you very much for your call. The first question that I had, of course, was, is the UFC in danger of becoming irrelevant? You know what I mean? Like, we know that the hardcore fans are going to support the sport. And of course, you know, we know that the UFC, when they are on pay-per-view, they only need to get a certain amount of pay-per-views to make it profitable for them. And of course, the UFC is trying to do as much as they can to get as many pay-per-view buys as they can. But the question still remains, is the UFC in danger of becoming irrelevant to the casual fan?
I don't think it's going to be irrelevant. I mean, I do think that there's a danger of overreacting a little bit to a bad run, and we've seen this before. I mean, I think it was 2013 where, you know, it really dipped quite hard. But they have to put in the work. And I mean, for me, I look at Kevin Lee and I'm like, wow, that guy's got loads of star potential. Now let's see the promotion go into it. I look at a guy like Francis Ngannou, and I think that guy could be the biggest star the UFC's ever seen, in my opinion, if he keeps winning and is as good as some of us think we do. And so I do think that it's, you know, the uptick can happen quickly. Obviously, you know, Francis, you know, not getting the fight on the Edmonton card has kind of halted, I think, at least the media momentum that he had gained, and hopefully that builds back up with this Alistair fight. So I largely, what's difficult for me to understand is that we know that the TV contract is going to be renegotiated, and we know that pretty much whatever happens, the UFC will probably, and it'll probably be for the better, look different when that TV contract happens. But whether it's going to slide into irrelevance or not, it has lost some of its cultural cachet, I suppose, over the last, you know, basically since last November when Eddie and Connor fought at Madison Square Garden. And that needs to be gained back if the sport's going to continue to grow and continue to really build its space within the mainstream environment. And I don't see that happening. And I think that, you know, when it comes to any sport, you're either growing or you're shrinking. And right now it feels like it's shrinking a little bit. So I pause short of saying it's a danger of falling into irrelevance. But I don't see there being growth right now necessarily.
Yeah, and I think that this is a particularly common kind of feeling with most major leagues or major sports right now. I listen to a lot of sports talk radio, unfortunately, in my life, but, well, not unfortunately, I enjoy sports. So, I mean, I listen to a lot of sports talk radio, and, you know, one thing that I hear is, throughout all sports, is that they are having trouble drawing new fans. And so I don't believe that it's just an MMA thing, that, you know, we're just being affected by the fact that we're not pulling in new fans. I just think there's a lot of options out there right now, and everybody's feeling it. You know, from the NHL to the NBA, I mean, and the NFL, I mean, those sports are going to be popular no matter what. And of course, there's some kind of craziness going on with the NFL and the NBA right now that in America, which I don't want to get into, but we've got a lot of input and a lot of media coming into us, you know, as sports fans or as consumers of media. And I just think there's a lot of media out there for us to consume. And the one thing that I thought of when I was thinking about this conversation is, you know, UFC Fight Pass, Danny, used to be a major goal. When the Fertitta brothers were in charge of the UFC, we heard that the fightpass.com was going to be the next Netflix or the Netflix of fighting. And they seem to have gone away from that direction. And this will lead me into my next question, but I want to talk about Fight Pass real quick, because it doesn't seem to be having the effect that the desired effect that it was originally supposed to have. So do you think that it's just the new management or the new ownership trying to focus on, you know, terrestrial cable providers and not seeing the future? I mean, we've had this kind of conversation before, but for anybody who's new to the show, what do you think about what's happening, certainly with the Fight Pass? And of course, you brought up the new contract, which will be very interesting to find out what happens there, where they go. And of course, if anybody's interested in this conversation, James Lynch, Danny Austin, and myself had this conversation, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago about the new contract, TV contract. And it was a very interesting conversation. So, Danny, let's talk about the fightpass.com. And we were having a conversation off on Twitter. You think that the UFC is kind of dropping the ball a little bit, yeah?
Yeah, I definitely think that they're dropping the ball a little bit. I sort of assumed that when Fight Pass was launched, the idea was they basically wanted a fight card every weekend. And, you know, it was really going to be a good deal getting that $10 a month, because you were going to get a bunch of basically exclusive content. And, you know, that goes with what I was saying about growth, where they were just going to have, you know, cards basically every weekend, and not everything needed to be a pay-per-view. And they really pulled away from that this summer, purely. I think that this does relate to the TV contract. I do think that they want to be getting big TV numbers and putting together, you know, big cards for their TV partners, because they do. I mean, that is the lifeblood of any sport. I wonder if there's a possibility that when these rights are renegotiated, you know, the likes of Amazon or Twitter or whoever might be getting in and trying to get a piece of the pie, of the UFC pie themselves, at which point, you know, the UFC would effectively be running a streaming service that was in competition with one of its partners. You know, I still think that the library of fights is good. I do think that when the WWE launched the WWE Network, you know, all the pay-per-views were included. So I think that the price of being an MMA fan, if you want to watch every fight, which God knows why you would want to watch every fight, but if you did, I mean, it's quite expensive compared to almost anything else. I don't know what, you know, the NFL Game Pass is, but I know that, you know, annually it's considerably cheaper than what it would cost to watch every UFC fight. So I'm not entirely sure what the model is, but if it's basically going to be like, hey, here's where you can come watch all the second class fights, I don't know that that's sustainable. I don't know, you know, how many fans want that. So I do think that they've dropped the ball in terms of making it be a must-have for fans. And if you're going to charge the amount that the UFC charges, I mean, you need premium content on there.
Oh, absolutely, I agree. So this brings me to another question, that because we saw the gentleman who was running the fightpass.com, he didn't get fired, but he decided that he was going to take another job somewhere else because the grass was greener. And I mean, it just kind of leads me into my next question, because we saw the purging of a lot of high-end UFC executives when the new ownership came about. And the reasoning for that was, I guess, because we haven't really heard from them at all, Danny, have we? We haven't really heard from the new management. And maybe let's talk about that real quickly, because we discussed this, you know, when a year ago, even plus, you know, ago, we haven't heard from the new ownership at all. I mean, we've been relying on, you know, Dana White to kind of have a resurgence and kind of lead the company, but we haven't heard from the guys behind the scenes. And I think that we just don't really know what the direction of the UFC is. Do you have any comment on that?
I had heard, and this would have been earlier in the year, and the kind of the deadline that I was given passed, but I'd heard from one of the Vegas-based reporters who, you know, really does have to cover the business of the sport as well as the sport, that that Ari Emanuel, who is WMEIMG's owner, would be speaking in 2017. That that WMEIMG,
right,
when they initially bought the company, you know, it was a bidding war. They didn't know if they were getting it. And therefore they didn't want to articulate publicly what their vision was because they weren't sure yet. They had to take a look at everything. And to be honest, I mean, it's time, first of all. We need to, those conversations should be had. But I mean, in a sport where kind of Dana White can say one thing one day and then another, the complete opposite the next, yeah, it would be nice to have some sort of idea of, you know, what the vision is and, you know, how they intend on making back that over $4 billion. But it certainly is time. And, you know, you look at European soccer and, you know, the owners have to speak to the fans every once in a while. And, you know, they normally do it through the media, almost every team. And at the very least, someone from that side, it would be, I think it would just be beneficial for all fans to get an idea of what the plan over not just 1 or 2 years, but 5, 10, 20 years, because you don't spend $4 billion and then sell the company a couple years later. I mean, these guys are going to be the stewards of the sport for, you know, most likely for the rest of our lives, to be totally honest.
Yeah, it just seems like they've been dropping the ball, like we mentioned earlier, in many different ways. I mean, one thing that I kept going back to, because, again, we've had this conversation numerous times on this show, but I do believe that the firing of the top executives was a major mistake by the new ownership, by the Empire, because I mean, even if you keep them on for a year and you get your executives that are going to take over the jobs, you get that personal experience with the people who know what they're doing. You know, they know what the fight game is. They know the partners, they know the negotiating tactics that these people have. And I just thought it was a major mistake for them to just get rid of everybody. I know that they were very high priced executives, and then the Fertitta brothers were paying everybody very, very well. But I thought it would have behooved the new ownership to have kept these guys on just for a little bit. I know that not everybody's going to want a contract, or I know that their job is going to be coming to an end in a year, but I just thought that maybe it would have been a smarter idea to keep these guys on who knew what they were doing and were familiar with the ins and outs of the fight game.
Yeah, I mean, for a little while at least. It is not uncommon. I know, without going into details, I mean, my dad was, you know, the head of law for a major IT company that was purchased near the end of when I was in high school. And a year and a half later, he lost his job. He knew it was going to happen because that's what happens in major corporate takeovers. The people who own the business want their own people in there. And that's just how it goes. But, you know, as you said, a year or however long. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I've always said that the fight game is different, and that the ins and outs and the specifics of the fight game are just, they don't line up with what I see in other sports, with what I see just in other walks of life. So, you know, part of what you're saying, I believe, and I don't think that the situation is so, so dire with the UFC. I just think that after the highs of kind of a couple of years there, we're kind of going through a little bit of a low right now. But there are times when I feel like the decisions that are made are for short-term monetary gain versus sustained growth over a long time. And, you know, frankly, this weekend's main event, as much as I think Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson is a great fight, was clearly like, oh, hey, we got a little bit of momentum with Kevin Lee. Let's throw him in against the number one lightweight in the world. Was maybe not the smartest, you know, long-term planning, but, you know, there's a level where I do think for all of the crap that Dana White and the Fertitta sometimes often get, they were remarkably good at building a long-term plan. And they executed it, and I feel we have lost that a little bit.
Yeah, I remember being on this show, before the company was sold, and saying, you know, I want to get the Fertittas out of here, and yada yada yada. And I remember my co-host saying to me, the DJ Tony saying to me, you know, be careful what you wish for. You know what I mean? Like, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and we have really gone through, you know, some kind of changes. And like you said, I feel like the UFC right now is living check to check. You know what I mean? Like, they are really just trying to make as much money as possible in short spurts. They're not actually thinking about the long term. You know, maybe they have investors breathing down their necks saying, you know what, you promised us X and O and this and that, and they can't deliver on it. But it just doesn't seem to be to make any sense. I just can't make heads or tails of it, Danny. I just don't know where they're going. And I mean, especially with the whole Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor fight, you know what I mean? We all knew that was basically a cash grab for the USC. And hopefully, you know, everybody made some money, but it just seems like they're living check to check. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. I will also note that in part, I do think that the fighters who happen to be on top at this very moment, it's not great. I mean, losing John, that, you know, that was for me. I mean, that was a painful day, just because I do think, you know, I've enjoyed John's career so much, and just knowing that, you know, it's probably done. It really felt, being there, because I was there in Anaheim for that fight, as if we'd hit a turning point at that post-fight press conference with John. I mean, we had a guy who, for all his mistakes, seemed to have gotten better. And then you look at, you go through the divisions. I mean, I think Stipe is great, and I have said this. I don't know if I've said it on your podcast, but I genuinely believe that, I mean, if Ngannou, who knows, maybe he beats Alistair. I think there's a good chance. But if he does, I think that there is a way to market Stipe versus Francis that might be the biggest fight, you know, you can do outside of Conor McGregor at this point on the entire UFC roster. I think that's just a massive, massive heavyweight fight, the likes of which they haven't had in a long time. But, you know, Stipe hasn't quite captured the imagination. Then light heavyweight with Jones and Cormier, obviously it's a mess. Middleweight, you know, they're doing this supposedly massive fight, but I haven't particularly enjoyed, you know, Bisping's tenure as champion. You know, welterweight Tyron is just, I don't know what to say about Tyron, but it's just sucked. And then, you know, you get a lightweight. Conor hasn't fought in over a year. They've made a mess of that. And he's also affected featherweight, so there's an air of not really legitimacy there. You know, bantamweight, Cody is apparently so there is a level where it's, you know, it's possible that just, you know, in 6 months we've got a whole bunch of new people up top and it feels totally different. But yeah, there's a lot going on, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, of course, we've had this conversation before. I mean, you and I have had this conversation about, you know, whether or not all press is good press, yada yada yada. But like you said, I mean, we've got a champion that was holding the 145 belt, now is holding the 155 belt hostage. Not sure if he's going to come back. The UFC created a monster with him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, I know that it's not necessarily the new management or the new ownership's fault, because, you know, Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White were right along with this whole Conor McGregor train. And okay, let's get into this real quick. I didn't have this on my notes, but let's get into this, because Conor McGregor right now is, you know, he's not looking to get back to fight. You know what I mean? Why would he take an MMA fight right now when he could go into boxing and just make S tons more money? I mean, we may have touched on this before, but I mean, we're getting a little distance from that particular fight, which was in my opinion, a joke, but made everybody a ton of money. So, I mean, is this what we're going to see? I mean, can this sustain itself at all? I mean, what's going on with Conor McGregor? Do you think he fights again in the UFC?
Yeah, I do. I like, it's hard with Connor because everything he says, you know, if he does an interview where he says, oh, he'll be watching the Lee Ferguson fight, and if either guy does anything, that's all marketing, right? I mean, this is all pre-planned. I'm of the belief, just based on my own observations and, you know, drawing my own conclusions, that he probably fights Nate again. And I think that's a problem. I don't, you know, I think that the competitive integrity of the divisions matters. And yeah, I mean, he's going to make a lot of money with it, and that's great. I cover a lot of sports. I don't want my motivations for athletes to always be about the money. You know, I don't want it to be money, 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 money. I'm happy with fighters signing big contracts and then just moving on. You know, I don't resent any athlete for making the most money as they can, but when it's literally just screwing up what should be the marquee division in all of MMA, I think that's really problematic. So it's, at the same time, I mean, there's an argument made that Conor McGregor is the best thing that ever happened to the UFC. So, you know, I go back and forth on it. I just really, really wish that, you know, strip him of the belt if he's going to fight Nate again. Just make it that simple. Just strip him of the belt. No one, there are not going to be less people tuning in for Conor Nate 3 because there's not a belt on the line. So if that's the direction they decide to go, I don't expect them to listen to my advice, but, you know, I would like to see that division be allowed to move on. And frankly, the athletes who do deserve to get the extra money that comes with being a champion and all of that, you know, I think they deserve that opportunity, and they shouldn't just be waiting on one guy who has been given this power.
Yeah, I do see the Connor Nate fight happening. I do see it happening for the belt. I think if Nate wins the belt, or if he wins that third fight, we see a fourth fight. I don't know, man. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems so ridiculous to just hold that division up for so long. You know what I mean? Like, interim belts just are stupid. Let's just say that. Okay. I just want to move on because I'm going to get all fired up. Okay. I had a question for you because, you know, we've been like a year without Joe Silva, and, you know, really, really, he was a fantastic matchmaker. You know, we had the stories that coming out that, you know, maybe he wasn't the nicest guy in negotiations, but you know what? He got the job done. Do you miss Joe Silva?
Yeah, of course I miss Joe Silva. Joe Silva was Joe Silva. I mean, he was such an integral part of the sport. I do think that a lot of the matchmaking problems that we're having sort of go back to what I was saying about the people up top at the divisions. Yeah. But it clearly was a really unique skill to be able to look at a fighter, see what their potential was, and come up with the right matchup to both test them and build them. And that is missing a little bit right now outside of a couple of fighters. And, you know, I don't really know how to elaborate on this. I feel like I need to give you a longer answer. But of course, Joe Silva is missed. That being said, I mean, as the primary matchmaker, you know, Sean Shelby deserves to be given a little bit of leeway and have time to make some growing pains.
Sure.
So I don't think that, you know, it's necessarily the end of the world. I honestly think that as much as the matchmaking has been poor, a lot of it is just the fighters up top. I really do believe that. They haven't had that many active champions who are all about any interest to fans right now.
No, I agree with you that the landscape is different. As we had mentioned earlier on, I really do wish that the Empire would tell us what they want to do. Like, tell us if you have some kind of matchmaking, you know, philosophy. I mean, right now, I think that Joe Silva is just being, and of course, Mick Maynard as well. I mean, I think they're just both being held captive by people at the top that don't really know what they're doing. Which brings me to my next question. Okay, so let's talk about the old face of the UFC. I mean, it's not the old face, but I mean, he has been in and out of the limelight many times. This is Dana White, who I'm talking about. Quite recently, it feels like since the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight,
Dana White has not really wanted to promote anything. I think he got a taste of promoting one guy, you know, like he used to do back in the day, one or two guys when he had Tito or he had Chuck Liddell, and the good old days, you know what I mean? When you could just be the fan of that guy and not have to promote 600 people. What is your thoughts about Dana White right now? I mean, he just doesn't seem like he's the same kind of guy. And of course, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but of course, in the contract negotiations for the Mayweather-McGregor fight, we heard from WMIG. Did I get that right?
WMEIMG. Yep.
There you go. I apologize. I can never get it right. But we heard from them that Dana White was no longer a part of the negotiations for the Conor McGregor Mayweather fight. And then, of course, Dana, being the guy that he is, comes back and says, that's not true. To me, that seemed like a little bit of a rift between the, you know, the ownership of the UFC and, of course, the president. So let's talk about Dana White. Go ahead. Feel free.
Well, I mean, I think that sort of rift is inevitable. I'm sure that the Fertittas and Dana had, you know, more than their fair share of problems over the years. And you know what, I'm in the middle of a massive back and forth with one of my best friends right now. So, you know, these things do happen. And sometimes the fact that, you know, that we have a public issue between, you know, two public groups doesn't mean that, you know, all ties are about to be severed or anything like that. I agree that it doesn't feel like Dana is as engaged as he should be. I mean, the fact that he didn't show up in Edmonton, in Edmonton, right? I'm not making that up. I'm not remembering that wrong.
He did not.
That sucks. He should be. And Alberta fans have been through so much. I really think that, you know, Dana being there and doing it, when he's on his game, he's a master promoter. I mean, I think you, as much as I hated the press tour for McGregor Mayweather, you know, Dana was a whole lot more charismatic. But yeah, he doesn't seem as engaged. I mean, he's a guy with over $300 million in the bank account. So I'm sure there's other things he wants to do. I'm sure that, you know, after devoting 20 years of himself, to this sport, I'm sure that he'd probably like to spend more time with his family in Vegas and, you know, go fishing or whatever it is that Dana does. I don't know. But it's odd that, despite all that we're saying, I mean, you look at the original programming that the UFC has sort of rolled out and introduced over the last 2 years. I mean, what are they called? They're Dana White looking for a fight. Dana White, the Contender Series or whatever that's called. Yeah. And they have Dana White's name in it, which I personally hate. And I thought that when Steven Espinoza from Showtime said that, you know, in boxing, they like to put the fighters first. I think he had a really good point. So I don't think, you know, Dana's value to the company and, you know, the brand that his name represents is still clearly front and center for the plans. But I think he needs to be there at every pay-per-view. I'll say that. I think fans want to see him. I think media so rarely gets the opportunity to, as you said, ask anyone about the direction of the company that I think Dana is needed. And I know that at a post-fight, post-fight press conference, it's interesting talking to the fighters, but when Dana's not pretending he can't hear you, he's actually someone with a lot of insight into the sport who he's someone who I appreciate his insight. So I think I'd like to see him step a little bit back more into that role. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot of him in Vegas as he presents a brave face for the UFC in the light of the awful attack last weekend.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Dana White's role has definitely changed. And of course, we know that he is dealing with the, you know, Meniere's disease. And this job has got to be tough. You know what I mean? We have to take into account that this guy, you know, deals with a lot of stuff that we can't even imagine. And I can understand the amount of stress that he's under. And I can also understand that this may not last forever with, you know, his buddy's not running the company anymore. And I did say that when the company was bought, that I don't believe that Dana White is going to last the 5 years of his contract. I just don't.
No. And anyway, can I add one thing also? For all the
you
criticism
may,
Dana White
as much
takes,
as you want.
For all the criticism Dana White takes, I mean, he's not Roger Goodell. You know, just doing awful things. You know, ignoring domestic violence until. Or not, I shouldn't say that. That's actually me being libelous. You know, issues with domestic violence that, you know, haven't been appropriately dealt with. He's not Gary Bettman doing interviews with media in Calgary directly trying to affect our municipal elections so that the Flames can get more tax dollars for arenas. Like, we are, and I say this with love, but, like, you are, and fans, hardcore fans, are so deeply invested in the sport that I think that I genuinely believe that Dana could be, should be doing more. But there are worse people to have running a major sports organization. Because as someone who covers other sports, I see that all the time.
Yeah. And I you know, that's why we have you on the show, Danny, because, you know, you're a real journalist, man. You see the ins and outs of other sports. And that's why I'd like to have you on this show, because we get into this bubble, you know what I mean? We get into our MMA bubble and we don't understand what happens in other sports. And, you know, we hear it from afar, or maybe we don't hear it from afar. So I appreciate everything you have to say. And it's good to have that that eye on other sports. But let's kind of shift gears here while we're running out of time. We're kind of running on fumes right now. And I promised in the description of this show that we would get into hashtag UFC 216 live. From the granddaddy of them all, the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Okay, let's talk about the two championship fights, because that's what I said to you that we were going to talk about. Let's talk about Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee. Of course, this is not for a real title. It's for the interim title. Of course, I'm sure both guys are pleased to be fighting for that interim title. As we said earlier on, because we don't know what's going on at the top of the division with the champion, which is very depressing. I'm not asking you for any predictions or anything, but let's go ahead and get your thoughts on this fight. I mean, did Kevin Lee deserve to get an interim title?
Man, deserve ain't got nothing to do with it. Kevin Lee did what he had to do to put himself in this position. You know, Kevin Lee took advantage. I hate this sort of self-promotion shit, but at that press conference where he punched Chiesa, I asked him like three questions because I was like, this guy is being gold right now and he's seizing his opportunity. He looked so good against Chiesa. I have no problem with it. I mean, you look at who's above him. You know, Nate Diaz is, I guess, ranked above him. I'm looking at the official rankings right now. Justin Gaethje, we'd all love to see him fight more, but he's had one UFC fight, let's be honest, and it was a barn burner and we all loved it, but you know, he could have gotten knocked out pretty easily in that fight. I don't know what the hell's going on with Edson Barbosa, if I'm being totally honest with you. CFL may have gotten in that way. Oh, he beat Dariush in March, but, you know, hasn't been really active. I don't think anyone's really arguing that Barbosa. Eddie Alvarez, he doesn't deserve an interim title shot, and it would be a disaster for the UFC to have to run back Eddie Connor. And then Khabib, just, you know, he's not ready. He's not active. There's a lot of reasons not to give it. So, yeah, Kevin Lee's the guy, in my opinion. And look, I'm not a betting man. If I was going to put down money, I mean, Tony has proven it against higher caliber competition. So, you know, you got to treat him as the favorite, but you can only beat the guys who've been put in front of you. And, you know, Kevin Lee has done a pretty good job of that. So I think he looks good in the spotlight. I'm happy that he's getting this opportunity, frankly. I'm pretty okay with this. And I wish, for all the stuff that we had just talked about, the UFC or Dana White or whatever, all that they really had to do was 2 weeks ago say 100% the winner of this fight gets Connor. And there's your promotional angle. Bam, everyone's talking about it. You know, all the Irish fans are tuning in to see what Tony and Kevin Lee have. I mean, it's getting talked about on ESPN. This is I wish they'd done that. And, you know, more than the interim title, that would have been the prize to fight for, even if we both know that it's entirely possible for Dana to say that Tyron gets GSP if he wins, and then an hour later, it's not happening. So, I like this fight, man. I really like this fight. Even if Tony totally torches him, I think it was the right fight to make.
No, yeah, it's a great fight to make. I agree with you 100%. And of course, Tony Ferguson really does deserve to have that belt around his waist. I mean, with the win streak that he's put together, I mean, this guy here right now coming up is a great opponent. He's definitely selling the fight. And of course, as we saw with the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight, that's all that you really need is to sell the fight. So let's move on
and
real quickly.
I think this has fight of the year potential. Sorry, I just want to say quickly. I think this has fight of the year potential. I think Tony's that good. I think it's such a huge opportunity for Kevin Lee, and that, you know, that recipe just makes sometimes for magic. I think this is a great fight. I don't want to cushion that at all. I want to just go on record. This is an awesome fight. If you like MMA, who doesn't want to watch Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson?
Yeah, and I've said in previous shows leading up to this one that this particular fight card is fantastic. I mean, the fact that Tavares is fighting on the UFC Fight Pass early prelims shows you how good this card was. And of course, unfortunately, we lost the women's 125-pound fight, but, you know, that would have been really, really interesting to see, but unfortunately we lost it. So we have a fill-in fight, but I'm not going to get into that because I want to talk about Johnson versus Borg. Of course, Demetrius Johnson and Ray Borg were supposed to fight on UFC 215. They quickly rescheduled because of illness on Borg's part. You know, Demetrius Johnson, that doesn't fall on him. It does, no fault goes on Demetrius Johnson for that fight falling out. They put it on this fight card, and of course, people are talking, Danny. They're saying that this is the real title fight, and it shouldn't be the co-main event. But, I mean, this is what happens in the fight game. We need to reschedule, and I do agree that we need to go with, you know, the 155-pounders, even though it's for an interim title fight. Our intern belt. What do you think?
Yeah, get over it. Like, if people are really losing sleep over the order of these two fights, I mean, they were promoting Tony and Kevin first as the main event. You don't just change the main event because Ray Borg had, you know, health issues that were apparently unrelated to his weight cut, even though they were definitely related to his weight cut. I am, you know, I was up in Edmonton for that card. I saw just how crushed the fans up there were when this fight was canceled. It's not DJ's fault, but for them to just, you know, bump off Tony, after all Tony went through with Khabib and Kevin Lee getting this big moment, for them just to be bumped off because that fight fell apart in Edmonton would have really sat poorly with me. So like this is one of the things, the laziest thing anyone who wants to prove that they're an MMA fight fan does is talk about how amazing, how underappreciated DJ is. So I'm not going to do it. We both know DJ is an amazing fighter. He's a lot of fun to watch. I have no question that he's going to absolutely rock Ray Borg. This was honestly outside of DJ setting the title defense record. This was not really a fight that I cared. Like, it didn't get my blood pumping. But, you know, it's a good fight that we're getting to see one of the best of all time in Demetrius Johnson step in the ring. I mean, who isn't excited about that? But just, you know, just people need to cool it with this whole, everyone should love DJ because I love DJ because he's so technical. Like, fine, but people don't love DJ. Like, fair enough. I wish the UFC had done a better job promoting him. But, like, ultimately, Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson are headlining this card. It's going to be an awesome fight. Hopefully we get an awesome fight in the second to main slot. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, no, I agree 100% with you. I thought that, Ray Borg is a fine challenger. The division at 125 is kind of, thin, and we can make all the comparisons to Anderson Silva and his reign as we want, because both divisions were kind of light at the time. But we're not going to get into that right now because we're trying to end this show. Quickly, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay, but
Danny Austin. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I was just going to say that, like, as light as this division is, part of the reason, and I mean, we're going to praise Joe Silva and all that, but, like, part of the reason is that Cejudo was pushed into a fight with DJ too early. You know, Horiguchi, who's now gone, was pushed into a fight too early. Those are guys who, like, Horiguchi looked so good before he left that had they been a little bit more patient with those fighters, we could have gotten, you know, much more competitive, just awesome fights. So yeah, you know, Ray Borg is the right guy at this moment, but you know, if they had taken a little bit more time, I mean, I would not have minded running back Benavidez and DJ, and giving
that's the fight
Cejudo
that needs to happen,
more time,
in my opinion.
Yeah, and it'll never happen. But that's the fight that should have happened.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah. But yeah, so sorry. I just wanted to, that was just a quick tirade. I haven't had the chance to just spew nonsense that
I didn't mean to
for
run
a while,
over
so.
You there.
Yeah. No worries.
I didn't,
let's keep going.
I didn't mean to run over you there, but I mean, I'm just trying to end the show. So.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so quick spotlight fight of the night. I'm going to put you on the spot. Of a fight that's not on the main card that you are looking forward to. There are plenty of fights on this card, Danny Austin. Spotlight fight of the night. Go.
Okay, I'm looking right now. I think Paul Gonzalez is awesome, so that fight is up there. To be honest, I mean, I don't think that Will Brooks, Nick Lentz is sort of an amazing, awesome fight, but I think Will Brooks, like, hasn't quite shown what he's capable of in his UFC career yet. So he's a guy who I'd like to see him kind of put it together in the UFC. And you know, Nick Lentz is a game opponent. So maybe that's the one that I'm going to go with, just because it has less to do with the matchup and more to do with the fact that I think Will Brooks is capable of more than he's shown so far.
No, I agree with you. I think that fight is a perfect fight to choose for a spotlight fight of the night. Okay, Danny, it's been a long time. I'm glad that we got back together finally. We're back.
You bet, man.
And you're gonna be very close to me next week. You're gonna be very close to me next week. We should probably try and have a pint. I mean, let's be honest. Anyways.
Let's do it. And I will be in New York at the end of the month too. So getting back, ramping it up a little bit. But thank you so much for having me, man. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thank you for being on this show, of course. Again, guys, this is Post Media's main man. And if you're not familiar with what Post Media is, it's the biggest publication in the country of Canada. So follow Danny Austin at Danny_Austin_9. Thank you, Danny Austin, very much. I appreciate talking to you because we always have a great conversation. So have a great night. Enjoy your laundry, which I know you will, because laundry is always fun. And enjoy your wedding this weekend. And I hope to have you on again in the near future. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you so much, buddy. Cheers.
All right, cheers. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Danny Austin. He's the man. I mean, we've had him on many, many times on this show, and, you know, it's just great MMA conversation. I mean, we could have gone for another hour, but Danny didn't have that time, unfortunately. All right, so I'm not sure when the show is going to come out. Hopefully it comes out right away, but if it doesn't, it'll come out in the future. UFC 216 is about to happen. We're down with the sickness. Anyways, thank you very much to Danny Austin. Thank you very much to Lavasi International. Of course, thank you very much, Amp Radio Network. We have another show coming up tomorrow night. I know it was a little bit delayed, but we're going to have Smack My Picks Up coming out tomorrow night. I'm going to share this on the social medias before it gets edited. Hopefully you all listen to it, because we have some relevant things to say. I mean, I thought we had a good conversation about what's happening in the UFC right now, and of course what's happening this weekend in Las Vegas. Again, I want to say the tragedy that happened in Las Vegas was terrible. I mean, there are many social and political things that we could talk about, but we're not going to do that on the show. I thank you all very much for listening. All our new listeners, I thank you very much for listening. We love you very much. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at PROADOS. Follow DJ Tony at I'm DJ Tony. And, of course, tomorrow we'll have everybody else on and we'll give out their Twitter, follow their Twitter at mention. Followed Danny Austin at Danny Austin, DannyAustin underscore 9, of course, of Post Media fame. Thank you very much for listening. And with that,
hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Thank you all for listening. Love you very much. Good night. From the Amp Studios in Canada.